You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is the home of Jerry's Percentages.
You're all pigeons. Filthy, filthy pigeons.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Final hour Overdrive, TSN 1050, now on TSN 2. Brian Hayes and Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press are in here. The O-Dog will be back in a moment. He's still trying to catch his breath from the race heard around the world about an hour ago. Jonas, you beat the big boy. You beat him.
Now do I have to face you and Darcy?
I didn't get the impression like Tucker wanted to race you. I'm not going to race you. You'd smoke me. I'm slow as molasses.
Okay.
I have no speed, no flexibility. I'm not even pretending like I'm fast.
Okay.
So I'm not taking you on. No chance.
I actually think you guys should do like an Olympic-style thing. You, O, and Noodles. Just like create some events, maybe play some basketball, like a long jump maybe.
Okay.
Who can throw the football the longest?
That's a good idea. We can do that.
I think it'd be fun.
I think I would smoke them in everything non-hockey.
Really?
Yes. Everything non-hockey. Basketball wouldn't even be close. Football would not be close.
Do you think they know how to play basketball at all?
Not really. I'll bet you Noodles. Noodles is such a hockey guy. Like, that's all he did was play hockey. Like, he's athletic. You have to be athletic to be a pro athlete. Mm-hmm. And to be a goalie, he's overly flexible. I'll bet you he's sneaky good at different sports where you wouldn't necessarily expect it, but I don't think he's got any background in any of these sports.
What about golf? I've heard Jeff is actually a pretty good golfer.
He is legitimately like a scratch golfer. Noodles never played.
Really?
He has no interest in golf. You want to get a frustrating story. Like, you're not a big golfer, but you appreciate golf.
Yeah.
And you appreciate great courses.
Yeah.
I think he was playing in Minnesota, and the team was in San Jose, which is about a 20-minute drive to Pebble Beach. And they had an off day, and I believe he told the story that the team agreed to pay for everyone to play Pebble Beach. He didn't even play. A free round at Pebble Beach. He sat in the cart with his cell phone and called people, texting people. Didn't even play. Another story he told... During the lockout, he was playing in, I think he was in Scotland or in England or something like that. And I think Pronger called him up and said, myself and a few of the boys were coming over. We're playing, I think, St. Andrews. Come up and meet us and play. He went up and met them, didn't play. Same thing. Walked the course, sat in the cart. Had the opportunity to play St. Andrews and Pebble Beach and did not follow through.
See, I would play.
I hope
like
so.
Like, that just seems like a lifetime opportunity. Why wouldn't he take... Does he know how to play? Like, could he?
I just don't think he cares. I really don't think he cares. So I'll give him credit for that. He stays true to himself. His hatred of golf or his complete apathy of golf never changes. Shane Doan will join us in about 20 minutes. Thursday night or tonight, Giants at Eagles. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. Let's catch up with an old buddy. Haven't spoken with him in quite some time. From the Sporting News, Sirius XM Radio, here is Alex Marvez. What's happening, Alex?
Behave, Merry Christmas. Hope you're doing well. You're right. The last Thursday night game of the season, we'll always have the Jaguars and Titans. You know,
right.
We'll always have those memories.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, we'll try to end it on a high note here. And the weird part about this game is, by the way, if you look at the series history, the Eagles usually win. I mean, this is nothing new. Peyton Manning has a losing record against them. I believe it's 10-14 or 10-15 during his career playing against Philadelphia. So for everyone that's just penciling in an automatic Giants win, not so much. Maybe it'll turn out that way, but history would tell you that this game is either going to be a lot closer than what we think, or the Eagles may pull the upset, which would not upset the Dallas Cowboys one bit.
No, and you're right. I mean, Vegas, they're always on to this because they've had a bit of a sneaky line. I think it's at around 2.5, maybe 3. The Giants,
yeah.
And that's screaming people to hammer the Giants. But I think what Vegas is telling us is they think there's a chance Philly's going to win tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in short week games, you just don't know. You know, and that's what throws everything off, you know, because you know, you just don't, you know, you don't have your full complement of players. You don't have full complements of game plans. And, you know, it can be just really weird like that. So don't know what to expect. I can tell you this, though. I mean, it's interesting. The Giants defense is now carrying this team. And you know, we give Jerry Reese a lot of credit for some things. Look, we bash him for the way they handled Josh Brown. Obviously, that was a complete disaster. But, you know, when you spend the amount of money that he did and you hit big-time home runs, Janoris Jenkins, Snacks Harrison, Olivier Vernon, these guys have been tremendous for this Giants team. But it's a team that's winning in weird ways because they don't run the football very well, and they put a lot of strain on that defense, and they don't have a lot of depth on that defense. The one thing that I worry about, and if, Brian, we talk in 3 weeks from now, I'll be very curious to see what this Giants team looks like in terms of injuries, in terms of if they're still performing at a high level, because they put so much pressure on these guys to produce, because the offense, not only is it the running game, Eli Manning and his receivers haven't always been on the same page. But the one thing they can rely on, Odell Beckham Jr. taking it to the house. Nobody has scored more touchdowns in the NFL since week six of the NFL season than OBJ.
Well, they've got an interesting feel about them right now, and it's somewhat nostalgic because this has happened before where they get hot at the right time, they go into the playoffs, people start to undervalue them or not consider them favorites, and then all they do is win Super Bowls once they get there. Are you starting to feel that? I mean, does this have a Super Bowl vibe to it considering what they did in 07 and 2012?
It does, but let me just say this. It's a matchup league, and I'm not being cliche here, but look, the Cowboys don't want to face these guys, okay? There's no doubt, because the Giants have their number. They've beaten them twice this season, albeit by 4 points combined, but they know how to play the Cowboys. They do a great job there. But if the Giants have to go to Seattle, do you feel like the Giants are going to go into Seattle and win? I don't. I just think that's a bad matchup for them. So that's what I just want to see what the playoff field is, where the Giants are playing. I mean, do the Giants win tonight? Does Dallas stumble potentially against Detroit? Matt Stafford, a Dallas native, coming back home. You know, the Giants did a great job shutting him down. Can the Cowboys do the same? Are they going to be able to continue to roll like they did? I mean, look, it's not like the Cowboys have been blowing teams out lately either. They beat the Bucs by 6, lose to the Giants by 3. You saw what they did against the Vikings. They barely won that game. So I don't know if this team is necessarily peaked either. So it's fascinating. But, yeah, I get what you're saying with the Giants, though. You know, always them catching this cycle. It was always, you know, week 15, they start getting hot. Week 16, they start getting hot. But to their credit, this team has actually won double-digit games already and is playing some really good football. Kudos to them.
Alex, we were talking about the career of Eli Manning, and we got around to him and Phil Rivers. If I asked you right now who has had the better career, and obviously Eli's got the 2 Super Bowls, who would you lean towards?
Jonas, I have to lean toward Eli, and you know, look, I'm a Philip Rivers guy. I know Philip. I like him personally. I really like so much of what he stands for, not only as a player but as a person. He's such a great competitor, and he's been saddled with some pretty lousy teams through his NFL career. But you know, Eli Manning has the rings, and he's produced. You know, and he, you know, he had that slump in his career, but he bounced back from it. You know, that's the thing with Eli. I mean, you know, he's actually, if you look at the numbers the past few years, they're about as good as anybody in terms of 30-plus touchdowns, minimal interceptions. So he's done a really nice job. But, you know, are either of these guys going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame? I just don't know about Eli. I just, you know, Philip, unless he wins a Super Bowl or 2 of them late in his career, I think he's going to be one of these guys in the Hall of Very Good that needs to open up, like in the Disney World area or something. But, I mean, you know, but Eli, you know, it's going to be an interesting debate because he did it in the NFL's top media market. He's found himself professionally, done a great job. And it's, but, you know, think about this as well. How many playoff appearances have we seen from the New York Giants in the past 4 years? 0, right? So what does that say about Eli? I mean, when we look at the best quarterback in the draft class, the guy playing in Pittsburgh, number 7.
Well, I think it'll be a fascinating debate. I think he's right on the cusp. I think he is the definition of a borderline Hall of Famer that very well could get the votes, because I think he, for starters, he's an Iron Man, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. You know, you mentioned Roethlisberger a moment ago. Ben's a big, tough guy, but he misses games. Eli does not miss, and that is so valuable in the NFL world. And I think he's a guy that will likely play until he's 40, and you'll look back and say, wow, look at the numbers. Like, I could see him top 5 in a lot of different categories, including interceptions, which he's on pace to be, I believe. Maybe including losses, because there are some down years throughout his career. But there's something about Eli. You know, we goof on him. He's Captain Vine, Captain Meme. Yet, I trust him. I don't know why. Right. I know he throws a lot of picks, fourth quarter picks. There's something about Eli in a big game, big moment. I feel like he can get it done. And I don't think that applies to a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL.
Such a great point, you know, because you just point to those Super Bowls and leading the game-winning drive the way that he did against New England Patriots teams that, you know, they're the Patriots. They're the gold standard of the NFL. And he beat them. He beat them twice. You know, it's why I always wondered, like, a team, you know, that was looking for a head coaching vacancy, why they wouldn't have considered Tom Coughlin. You know, and maybe he ends up in Buffalo. I won't dismiss that possibility. But, you know, Tom knew how to beat the Patriots. I mean, or at least play them really tough during his time. You know, and the Dolphins, they hired Adam Gase, and kudos to them. They're looking, you know, like they've got a very promising future there because he's a really outstanding young coach. But, you know, and you're right about Eli. And it's a great, that's a great point that you mentioned as well, because this book has yet to be written. You know, and with Phillip, the way he plays, you know, he still gets the ball there. It's a very herky-jerky delivery, but he ends up getting the ball there, and he throws a nice deep ball. But I just see it like this. I think Phillip, once his career starts to go down, I unfortunately think it's going to go down in a hurry, you know, where all of a sudden those little passes that he just sneaks past the defender, well, they stop sneaking past, and they start getting intercepted. And we've seen great quarterback play, you know, go down. But, you know, at least for the time being, Phillip's going to be with the San Diego Chargers. He's committed. I don't think there'll be an offseason trade. And the reason I'm even bringing this up is because of what's going on with the San Diego Chargers right now. And, you know, this franchise, if they move to Los Angeles, is Phillip Rivers really on board? Does he want out at this point because maybe he doesn't want to raise his family there? I don't think he wants to commute every day back and forth. I mean, he literally, I think, has 7 kids. And, you know, so I think there's some family things there. So it'll be an interesting future for him. And I feel for Mike McCoy, Chargers head coach. I have a soft spot for him. 18 guys on injured reserve this year. And no Melvin Gordon this week against Cleveland. I mean, the low point, what these guys need to not have happen, Mike McCoy does not need to be losing the Cleveland Browns. You do not want to be that team because that starts to cost you jobs.
With Alex Marvez from the Sporting News and SiriusXM Radio, where do you stand on a debate that is starting to percolate throughout the NFL surrounding my boy Aaron Rodgers, that if the Packers end up doing this, if they end up winning this weekend against the Vikings and the Lions lose at the Cowboys, then next week they roll into Detroit and spank the Lions and end up winning the NFC North, which felt like an impossibility a month ago, that Rodgers should be the MVP. Where do you stand on that?
You know, here's my thing. I have an MVP vote. I'm one of the 50 voters for this award. And if the season ended today, well, we'd have a lot of other things to worry about besides the MVP award. But I joke. But the point is that with MVP, you know, Ezekiel Elliott would be my guy right now because of consistent performance throughout the season. Ezekiel Elliott, since week 2, has not gained less than 83 yards rushing in a single game. I think if you're Eric Dickerson, you're not going to have to worry about your single-season rushing record this year, but your rookie rushing record at 1,808 yards, that may be fallen because Zeke is at 1,551 right now and playing some great football, and you know he may be able to get to that mark. So that being said, the way Aaron is playing, I think he's moving up in consideration. Matt Ryan has had a very consistent season, although that Eric Berry interception, you just can't get out of your head, but he has played pretty darn well for the Atlanta Falcons, a team that's really flying under the radar themselves. Matt Stafford doesn't make the Pro Bowl, which sort of baffles me, but this guy's set an NFL record this season with 8 games that he has led a fourth quarter comeback. No quarterback in NFL history has done that. You want to throw Dak Prescott in the mix? Only 4 interceptions all season, albeit a guy who's really considered more of a caretaker quarterback, but you can't argue with the Cowboys' success, and we've never seen a rookie do what Dak Prescott has done. And then we get to the suspension guys. What do we consider Tom Brady? He missed the first 4 games, playing great football, but do we count that the Flakegate suspension as something that's going to knock him and Le'Veon Bell? You know, look at the yards from scrimmage that this guy is averaging. It's unbelievable how much of a weapon that he's become, and yet he missed 4 games, or 3 games rather, because of a drug suspension. So do you penalize him for that? Just say, I don't feel good about a guy who didn't complete an entire season. So, and of course, the guy who probably deserves the award, maybe, or not probably, but would be in the conversation if his team wasn't out of playoff contention, is David Johnson. You know, we've never had a player in NFL history have 14 consecutive games opening the season with at least 100 yards from scrimmage. I mean, that's remarkable, but his team is 5-7-1, going nowhere fast. It was all or nothing last year for the Arizona Cardinals. This year, their theme is nothing.
It's a good point. And you did mention Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, who I think probably
took... Yeah, I didn't even get to those guys, right? You know, and the thing with Carr, I guess just because he slipped a little bit in the past couple weeks, is unfortunate with that finger injury that's happened to him. But he's a name that's going to come up among some. Russell, again, just because he had, you know, a 5-interception game against Green Bay and, you know, has been running for his life the entire season. And I think they've had 4 games where they've scored, I think, single digits. I just don't think that that's something that's going to win you an MVP.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Great catching up with you, buddy. Enjoy it this weekend, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Jonas. Merry Christmas to all.
You too. There he is. Alex Marvez from the Sporting News, SiriusXM Radio. Interesting. His vote would go to Ezekiel Elliott.
I'm going to look up the odds in Vegas because I think it's got to be, like, overwhelmingly Brady.
But the way he just laid it on the line, that's
a
voter.
A good case. Yeah.
He made it sound to me like Brady's not even in contention. Now, he doesn't speak for the other 49 voters, But he got to Brady late, and he just said, yeah, he's having a really good year, but it didn't sound like Brady was even in his top three.
Is he in your top three?
He'd probably be in my top three. But the four games, I mean, you have to take that into account. The guy missed 25% of the season.
Well, from what I can tell from the websites, Ezekiel Elliott is the favorite in Vegas.
Look at the numbers. Like, Marva's just laid two. Out, man.
Ryan 3, Carr 4, Rodgers 5.
See, Rodgers is a sneaky pick for me.
You should put some money down.
I might. I do think he's sneaky because if they beat up on Minnesota this week and then go at Detroit final week of the year, likely the Sunday night game on national TV, and he puts on a clinic to make them win the NFC North. The Packers have been a debacle this year defensively.
Well, and haven't debacle. They had no running game all year long?
They didn't score a rushing touchdown, I don't think, until like week 10 or week 11. Outside of him. Like, Rodgers had rushed, I think, two touchdowns himself. But from a player not named Aaron Rodgers, it was like week 11 or week 12. So they have no run game. Eddie Lacy's been out. No run game. One of the worst secondaries in football. No pass rush for the most part. They have been a disaster. And now they got a chance to win the division. And it's all because of Aaron Rodgers.
Let me ask you this. What's more impressive if Brady plays to, how old's Brady? 38, something like that?
He might be 39 now.
What's more impressive if he plays, like, let's say, into his 40s or what Jager's doing right now?
I would say Brady.
Because of the nature of the sport?
And because of the position. There's only 32 quarterbacks. There's a lot of wingers.
And that he's still top five?
Yeah, but also I think the position. There's 32 quarterbacks. There's 8 wingers on every team in the league.
Yeah, but it's not like he's been a scrub.
No, but Jager could technically be on a fourth line somewhere and still be playing.
Mm-hmm. But he's not.
I know, but if Brady became a fourth liner, quote-unquote, he would not be a starting quarterback in the NFL. So I think if Brady plays into his 40s, much more impressive.
How played until he was 50? Something like that?
In the NHL.
Yeah.
Gordy, that's a freak stat, though. Like, that doesn't even make sense. That's why he was just such a legend. Shane Doan will join us. He's 40.
He's 40, yeah.
And the Leafs are in Arizona tomorrow night. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. We'll catch up with him and ask him what it's going to be like to play against Auston Matthews, knowing that he is Matthews' idol. What's that like? What's that going to be like? So we'll catch up with Shane. We'll get the O-Dog back in here. We'll chat about the race of the century from earlier today at the TSN studios. If you missed out on that, we'll give you the details. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't forget to set your PVR on TSN 2. If you cannot watch the show live, you can watch it later. And you can find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. Also, check us out on iTunes. I'm going to catch up with Shane Doan here in a moment. The O-Dog is MIA. I think he's embarrassed to be in your presence.
Probably. Rightfully so.
Do you think
he thought he was going to win?
I think he did think he was going to beat you. I don't know.
I don't know why he would think he would be faster.
But you smoked him in that race.
Right.
Smoked him. So if and when he returns, we'll get back into that. We'll play some of the video on TSN 2. You can find it on Twitter, at Overdrive1050 or at HayesTSN. And we came out of the gate today talking about how everyone seems to be mailing it in because Christmas is on a weekend this year. And it's Thursday. Like, we got a show tomorrow. Noodles is coming back. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things tomorrow. There's a big football game tonight, big Leaf game tonight, a lot of games throughout the NHL. Mm-hmm. Raptors are in Utah tomorrow night. But it just has this general feeling in the city that people have already decided, I'm on vacation. Like, they've just made their own decision that they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, but you would be the same way if you didn't have to come in and work.
Yeah, I'm not saying I wouldn't take advantage of it, but I guess I'm on the opposite side of it because I have to continue to work and we have to continue to bring the same energy and professionalism to the show, which is very important to us. you know, I was saying that I was at Tim Hortons before the show. Nothing. No bagels, no donuts. Like, we got up there, and it was as if we were causing them problems.
Do you think they were just packing it in?
I think so.
Don't even bother making the donuts today. Who's going to show up?
Who cares? Like, no one's even here at TSN. Like, there's parking spots all over the place. I think a lot of people are already off. Anyway, Leafs in Colorado tonight. You can watch the game on TSN 4. You were doing your interview with PK, and you missed out on this conversation earlier.
Yeah.
But I don't put a lot of stock into the altitude issue. Like O said, I'm telling you, like, I've played there. It sucks. It really does change the way you play. Colorado's like 4-10-1 this year at home.
Yeah, but they're a bad team.
They're the worst team in the league.
Let's look up their record when they were actually good at home. When they had Forsberg and Sakic and Blake.
But that's not the weather, is my
point.
Speaking
of Sakic, when does he... Sorry, nice to be back.
Yeah, good to see you again. You stopped for a bite on the way over?
What?
You're chewing something.
There's stuff outside the studio that I just happened to grab one.
Okay. Continue.
Once again, remember we talked about like the sewering of a book? If I were just to out you, that would be my main thing I would say about you. Sewered me a lot.
Like in a greasy way, you're saying?
Yeah.
Like unnecessarily sewering you?
Yeah, like a lot of our listeners are in their cars, right?
They wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know if I was like just fighting a yawn. And you always say, how's the yawn going?
Have you ever fought one on national TV?
I don't think so.
Trade deadline day, that's a long day.
That one, by the end of that one, I don't even care what I do.
Have you ever yawned for the 6 p.m. SportsCenter hit on trade deadline day?
No. I've never yawned here. I fight it.
You do have a tactic that works.
Yeah.
You do fight it.
Which is what?
Using all the muscles in my face to hold down my lips so they don't yawn. Anyway, does it ever get to a point where, like, Joe Sakic, like, gets some heat critiqued or
he should.
Canned? It's a bit of a disaster.
There's just no mark. Like, there's not the market there. If that was here, he would be gone already.
But he is one of the most respected guys in the history of the game.
As a player.
Well, isn't all the talk that he's totally responsible for that operation?
It's his operation.
He was pretty proud when they were winning playoff games, and McKinnon was awesome. And
Well, that's why Patrick Waugh said, I'm out of here. A, I think he knew the team was garbage, and he didn't want his fingerprints all over it. But B, he wanted more power, and he lost out on that struggle.
But it's harder for them to do it because he's this beloved former player.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why I don't think... Remember we had this conversation the other day about players that you like or that you feel are good people or whatever are going to be given a pass or will not be hammered the same way guys who you think are jerks will get hammered. And Sakic is so respected. Universally respected. It's like Yzerman, right? Like the two of them, they're not going to get hit the way Brian Burke gets hit.
But it's different when you didn't play there, I think. Like if Yzerman was the GM of the Red Wings, I think it would be different. I think it's hard when you played in that place because people just adore you.
And you won in that place.
And you won there, right?
Right.
Like Shanahan, I feel like here, if the team starts to go sideways, I think he'll get heat. Because he doesn't have the history here. Like, he's from here, but he wasn't a Leaf.
You're right.
I don't know why it's different, but I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is. Because Sakic wasn't just a very good player. He was the greatest player in the history of that franchise. And he won them two cups. Captained them to two cups.
Was he the greatest player in the history of that franchise? What about Forsberg?
My vote would be for Sakic.
You played. Who's better?
Man, Peter Forsberg at his prime was...
Yeah.
But Joe Sakic had the captaincy. He had... I don't know. That's an awfully difficult one. But Peter Forsberg, in his prime, there was a couple years where he was the best player in the game. I don't know. Well, Joe. I think Joe won a heart.
Joe was real close. Yeah. Like, his numbers are staggering. And he was the captain, and he was healthy.
Conn Smythe, I believe.
Yeah, he was... He's an all-time great player.
Yeah.
They're both great players. But I think Sakic, without knowing the market, because I'm not from there, I would think he would be a little bit ahead of Forsberg because of the captaincy.
Yeah, but Brian, what we're getting to is when you get to the heat, when you're an owner of an operation, like I don't care who you are. I want to know what the hell's going on here.
I hear you.
I don't care how nice you are or how good you were or how good your slap shot was. I want to know what the hell's going on now.
I'd be having that internal conversation. They're the worst team in the league. Colorado is a disaster. Now all their players are coming out saying they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing to walk into the rink.
Yeah, the security guards don't want to wave. What was the quote?
Yeah, Nathan MacKinnon was saying it's embarrassing to talk to the security guards or they don't want to look you in the eye. And Varlamov went off earlier in the week. They're all having meltdowns. And that's why the Leafs have to pounce tonight. Like, the Leafs are not the 85 Oilers, so it's not. There's never a guarantee. Never a guarantee. But Colorado came in here a week ago, and the Leafs were all over them. And Varlamov stood on his head. They play the exact same way tonight, they'll win. And they should win. The next two nights are big nights in terms of trying to keep some sort of hope alive for the playoff chase. You've got to beat these two teams. You only got one of the 4 points when they rolled through your town.
Just for morale going home, going into the break.
Exactly. Go in with 4 points.
Like, you get pumped these two games, they're going to just be getting on the plane saying, game over.
Leafs in Colorado tonight on TSN 4. In Arizona tomorrow, you can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. Let's head down to Arizona, catch up with the captain of the Coyotes. Here's Shane Doan. How you doing, Shane?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well, and, you know, we've been obviously on the Auston Matthews train all year, and it was a big story when you guys were in town a week ago because he was taking on his favorite team growing up, and you were his idol growing up, and now the reverse is going to happen tomorrow night. Are you expecting a bit of a different buzz in the rink or in the city in general when Matthews shows up?
Oh, for sure, without a doubt. I mean, he's the flag bearer for the state for hockey, and the state, does if they get behind their local boys. I mean, the state is very proud of the people that are born and raised here or that grew up here, because it's a fairly new kind of group of people that are living here, and they're always looking for the next person to kind of carry that.
Well, I'm sure you were asked this when you first came into the league. What was it like to play against Gretzky or play against Lemieux? And now you're on the opposite side.
He played against Bobby Orr, too, didn't you?
Oh, get out of here, oh, you. Hey, you were in the league before I was. You're even older than me. So you
I know, but trust me, it's way more sad for me when I look at you and you're still playing, and I've been done for 10 years, buddy.
That's because, yeah, that's because we don't have a very good team here right now, so they keep giving me a jersey. So
you're allowed to keep showing up at the rink. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
But what's that like on the opposite side when you know you're playing against a guy and you are his idol? Like, what's that like playing against Matthews?
Well, I think he probably could have done a better job picking idols than if he wanted to be a good hockey player. But you know what? It's kind of cool, and I've gotten to know him and the type of person he is, and he's a pretty, I think that's probably the most amazing part of as you get to know him is, and probably the thing that Toronto's going to appreciate the most in the end is the type of person the guy is. He's just such a great kid.
Doner, just like following Twitter and people on social media, like, how impressive is it to see how big, like, minor hockey league teams in Arizona? I'm sure there was a time where you guys never would have imagined that. I mean, when I was in Carolina, there basically wasn't even hockey. And now to see all your buddies' kids and how big it is and them going to tournaments and kids actually making the NHL, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is. And, you watch the teams, the cities and the places that have the NHL, it seems to give them more validity to their programs.
Yeah.
And their programs seem to grow much quicker. And not to say like we're any better as a program than other cities, but you look at Phoenix and then you look at like Las Vegas, Salt Lake City, Seattle, Portland. They're not as strong as Anaheim, LA, San Jose, Phoenix. And I think that the team going into Las Vegas, all of a sudden in the next 10 years, you'll start to see that coming out of Las Vegas now. And it's, I believe it's the fact that you think it's capable. You get to see the players, your round players in the markets, the southern markets. There's not a lot of rinks. So if you're at a rink, there's a chance you're going to run into an NHL player at some point, because that's where we end up hanging out. So that's what we end up doing.
Well, Shane, I think Auston Matthews was born the year after Phoenix
yeah,
got there.
Yeah, you didn't need to say that. You can just say
well, I need to add context to my question. So What was it like when you first got to Phoenix in terms of like the hockey scene compared to now?
It was new. The Roadrunners had done a good job of kind of LA's farm team was here, and they were playing out of Veterans Memorial. And I had a couple friends that had been drafted by LA. I had a cousin that was playing for the Roadrunners, and so I kind of had a little bit of an understanding. But it was still the Southern States, and hockey wasn't by any, you know, means on the front page of the sports. But now, you know, when things are going well, we get lots of attention. And when things aren't going well, there's a lot of other things to do here in the Valley still, but we still have the ability to garner quite enough attention that it's starting to become talked about a lot more often.
We're chatting with Arizona Coyotes captain Shane Doan. The Leafs are in Arizona tomorrow night. You can hear that game right here on TSN 1050. You've got a couple of milestones, one that will definitely happen tomorrow night, another one that could happen tomorrow night. I don't know why we
Unless
keep bringing
you've been
up your
watching
age.
Me play lately.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you had a breakaway the other night, man. I thought you had it. Freddie Anderson stole that from you.
Yeah, he's a nice save.
Yeah,
I give him, he's
one.
An NHL goalie.
That's right. But you'll hit 1,500 games tomorrow night, all with the same franchise. And if you score, that'll be 400 goals. Obviously, you've had a remarkable career. But when you were 18, you got drafted. At that point, which milestone do you think would have felt further out of reach, 1,500 games or 400 goals?
Well, I think when everyone gets drafted, you always think that you're going to be able to score. And then so when you're 18, you think that there's stories of guys talking about, oh, yeah, I'm going to be able to score in this league. So I think you might have a chance at that, and then you play for a few years and you realize that you don't. But the 1,500 games was Eddie Olczyk was playing in Winnipeg my first year. And he'd played in his 850th game, and it was a big thing in our room. Show him respect, 815 games. And our 850 games, and I thought he was, you know, old at the time. Now I realize what the young guys are thinking about me. So probably the 1,500 games.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. 1,500. That puts you in a small, small category of players.
I played 820, and that was more than enough. enough.
And you probably almost got 400 goals in your 820. It's only taken me that twice as long as you.
No, I didn't come close to that. I think like 220, but that was all enough. Yeah. Everybody's got a different timeline, right, Shane?
It is.
Well, how do you look at what's going on with Jágr? I mean, Jágr, that's on a different level. Altogether.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. What he's doing is pretty remarkable. And I think one of the things is there's a lot of guys that I think we've given the opportunity, we'll talk to you about it, with given the opportunity with a coach that likes you and someone that's going to give you opportunities to keep playing, a lot more guys would have the chance to play a lot longer. It's just management changes, coaches change, things change, and soon you're on the outside looking in, and that's really what, for the most part, what changes a lot of guys' careers. And I've been fortunate here that they keep giving me a chance. But I think there's a lot of guys that are more capable than it seems, just because there's not as many people get the same chances.
We're chatting with Shane Doan. The amazing thing is, I'm looking at that draft here in '95. Your teammate went four picks later, Jerome McGinley, and he's played 1,505 games. You were both in Kamloops. And you have collectively played over 3,000 games. How's that feel?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Someone should have been fired for him going four after me, but at the same time, that's incredible, his career. And I mean, he's a standard for everyone in kind of my bracket of guys our age, of what you want to be and what you want to play like, and how much success he's had. It's pretty incredible.
Well, listen, Shane, we always appreciate you taking time. Enjoy it tomorrow night, and hopefully we get a chance to do this again down the road real soon.
I always appreciate it. Thanks so much.
There's Shane Doan from the Arizona Coyotes.
It's a lot of games, man. 1,500.
Well, and it also says, he's pumping the tires of Aginla, and Aginla is obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, but the two of them, tough as nails, can score. And if they've both played 1,500, that means they're Ironmen, too. They show up every single night. Like, think about that. They were both on the same junior team. I think Tucker was on that team, too.
Yep.
And Tucker, I think, played 1,000 games or close to it. And Doan and Aginla are at 3,000-plus combined already. Junior teammates winning Memorial Cups, both going the first round, and both are still playing at the age of 39, 40.
But you brought it up with, sorry.
Multiple cups for Darcy. I think he's got the old famous three in a row in junior.
Tucker won three. Like, he's legitimately one of the all-time great junior players ever.
Yeah.
Like, was the captain of maybe the greatest junior dynasty ever in
Canada. It's so hard to win a championship in junior. It's like there's a cycle. You're bad, you're good, and you got to, I don't know, it's very difficult.
I wanted to ask you, though, Brian brought it up with Shane Doan. What's it like when you get to face, like, your idol? Like, who is the guy in your career that was your childhood hero?
Gretzky. It's so weird to skate on the ice and you see them, and it's like, is this real?
Did you, like...
Even my first game I ever played, I was looking down in warm-up. I'm like, there's Messier with the, you know, just the bald head and wheeling around. And when I stepped on the ice for my very first shift, I took a face-off against Mark Messier. And you have to really, you got to be a pro somehow and just say, this is my job, and don't be overwhelmed or starstruck because you'll look like an idiot.
Did you say anything?
No. What am I going to say? How's it going?
Well, that's it. Like, how do you handle that?
Like, later in your career, you establish yourself, you get to know guys, you might get the odd, hey, what's up, what's going on in the face-off. But other than that, no.
So do you remember the first time then you talked to Gretzky or Messier?
I never talked to Gretz until I interviewed him. I never met him, never saw him, never said hi, nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
That shocks me.
Yeah, and we were probably in the same room in a lot of different places, but it's not... He's got 7 million people around him. I'm not going to go up and be like...
Trying to bother him would be... Oh. Although I think it's a situation for the average person. They do it because they're like, I'm never going to see him again. I don't care. I'm going up. I don't care. I'm going right through the entourage, and I'm going to tell Gretzky.
And I usually tell people that wanted to do that, he has no interest in talking to you. He doesn't know you, so stop it.
How many times a day do you think that happened to him, like each day, where someone goes up and say, hey, Wayne, I'm a really big fan?
You know what? I think his lifestyle would be sheltered enough where he's not putting himself in those types of situations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, back door there, private car there, not a lot of people around there. I would think, anyway.
I agree with you. I'm looking at this Kamloops team. Tucker had 137 points, led the team in 94-95. Doan had 94 points. Ginla had 71 in 72 games. Tyson Nash was on that team. Our boy Strutty was on that team. When you have 5, 6, 7, like, permanent NHL players on your junior team.
That's a dynasty.
Yeah, you're a dynasty. All right, we got some video and some audio we want to play from earlier this afternoon. Get to our best bets and 3 stars as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. This music is so appropriate because the O-Dog and Jonas, they had themselves a little race no more than 2 hours ago, and it was one hell of a race.
I thought I represented my camp very well.
Oh, there was more pressure on me for sure because I made the challenge. So if I don't deliver...
And you blew a tire early.
Yeah, so there was a lot of potential for danger.
I thought it was a great race. I was really ecstatic to be a part of it. I felt, honestly, fortunate to be there.
Did it feel like Michael Johnson, Donovan Bailey, that kind of thing?
No, because neither of you bailed like a chicken. Because that's what Michael Johnson was. He was a chicken for bailing on that race. When Bailey came around that corner, you knew he had him beat.
He pulled up lame.
Yeah, he pulled out lame. That's exactly what he did. It was a great race. The video's up on our Twitter handle, at Overdrive1050. The O-Dog taking on Jonas in the halls.
Did you consider bailing?
On what, the race?
Yeah, just like once I took the lead, did you just figure, nah.
I heard two idiots talking about it when I drove back here.
What do you mean when you drove back here?
I drive to the Studio 6. I find it to be more efficient.
Okay.
There's a part of me as an athlete that still thinks I'm really fast and could beat you. And then there's the reality part, right?
But do you think you could have beat me as an, like, in your playing days?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Dude, he was a pro athlete.
So? He was a great hockey player. That doesn't mean.
Well, you got to be fast. You got to be athletic. You can't come out of the gate looking like an offensive lineman.
Who knows? You were pretty fast. So if you want to play that game, I could. Whatever. Yeah, you would have beat me back then, too.
All right. Time now for Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. Prop bets tonight, Thursday night, are over the number total receptions, Odell Beckham Jr., over the number total quarterback sacks, under the number longest rush of 23.5 yards. Throw down 20 and you can score 110. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Let's get to the Overdrive. Three stars of the day brought to you by Babsox.
Overdrive. Three stars of the day.
I'm going to go with the first star of the day, the first star of the week, the Beagle, Jonas Siegel.
Yes.
Great job filling in for Noodles.
Brought the heat. Every day.
Lots of chirps, but we always have fun.
The first 17 minutes of yesterday's show in particular, you were brilliant.
I think I made it up because I was 20-something minutes early today. Anyway, I'll go Darcy Tucker because at least he came on and challenged us in person.
I like that. And I'll go with Shane Doan. I thought that was a great interview. Fun interviews today. Shout out to Tim Hortons, too, for mailing it in earlier this afternoon. He kind of set the tone for the afternoon. Overdrive, three stars of the day, is brought to you by Babsox. The Babsox Bab Shop is now open for the holidays and for a limited time only. Mount Pleasant at the Regent Theater. Say hi to your buds at Babsox. Wasn't prepared for the new read. We're out of here. Thank you, Jonas. Noodles is back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We're going
to
chat then.